You're listening to Wharton Business Daily on Business Radio.
Wharton Business Daily on Sirius XM 132. Downloading with you here in Philadelphia on a sunny but breezy February Tuesday morning. Great having you with us wherever you are listening across the United States or up into Canada. Just a reminder, our show is live for 2 hours every weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific, and then our show replays later in the day, 8 p.m. East, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. We also invite you to download the Wharton Business Daily podcast, which has interviews we have done in the recent past. Those interviews are posted every Tuesday and Thursday. Download it from wherever you get your podcast from. It is the Wharton Business Daily podcast. Well, even with the potential of tariffs against Mexico and Canada pushed aside for now, there is still much to be tackled by the members of the current Congress, everything from budget to regulation and more. Pleasure to be joined right now by Steve Womack, who is Congressman representing the 3rd District of Arkansas. Mr. Congressman, great to have you with us today. Thanks very much for your time.
Hey, Dan, it's great to be with you. And you just mentioned, you know, that I represent Arkansas's 3rd District. For those listeners that are unfamiliar with the way these districts are broken out, just know that my district is one of the more dynamic areas of the country, Northwest Arkansas, from Fort Smith up to the Rogers, Bentonville, Fayetteville, Springdale area. And we have, as I say, a very dynamic region, a lot of growth, some big fortune companies located up there. So I think we've got a pretty good finger on the pulse of what's happening economically in our country and around the world.
How, when you say diverse, how do you mean that exactly? And obviously, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later on the show, but the element of manufacturing is changing in a lot of portions of the country in terms of what it was traditionally, say, you know, 2-3 decades ago, to the types of companies that states and communities are looking to bring in now.
Well, sure. And I'm not beginning to suggest that the Northwest Arkansas economy is driven by manufacturing. We still have good manufacturing up there. And a lot of manufacturing has left the country, has gone offshore because, in my opinion, primarily because of labor prices. You know, the fact that labor is a key component, maybe the most key component. But in my particular area, you know, Arkansas stereotypically is a small state that punches way above its weight right now when you think about it, because I've got the titans of Walmart, Tyson Foods, J.B. Hunt located in my district. I've got the land-grant university, University of Arkansas, in my district. Our delegation, Dan, think about this. For a small state to know that every single member of the Arkansas congressional delegation holds a gavel right now. In the Senate, Tom Cotton at Intel, and on the Senate leadership group, John Bozeman chairs the Senate Ag Committee and will write the farm bill. On the House side, you've got Rick Crawford, who's the chairman of the Senate or the House Intelligence Committee, just newly appointed. Bruce Westerman runs resources, natural resources, chairman of that committee in his second term. And then Rick French Hill running financial services out of the 2nd District in Little Rock. And then I've got a senior appropriations spot and run the transportation and housing sector of the House Appropriations Committee. So you talk about punching above our weight. Arkansas, I think, is in a real significant position of influence.
All right, so let's dig into the topic of the week, and that being tariffs. We obviously saw the reaction by Canada and Mexico with those being put on hold for right now. China responded with their own tariffs. What's your reaction to all that has occurred around that topic in the last 24 hours?
Well, it really, it's not much of a surprise. The president ran on the subject, and he's following through with those promises and taking decisive action early on in his term. And the word that I come up with in this whole process, and there's a lot of conjecture out there about how, why, when, where, all on all these tariffs is it's leveraging, and all the president's doing right now is leveraging the tools at his disposal to protect Americans. And there's no question what we had a border security issue. Every polling data point in the 24 election pointed back to two primary things that I paid attention to. One was border security. The other one was high inflationary costs. And look, tariffs are a very proven, effective negotiating tool. And as evidenced by the fact that he comes out with a few days ago with the message on Canada and Mexico, and all of a sudden now you see some cooperation from these two countries. So I'm not a big broad brush tariff sort of person, but I do think right. you've got to use the tools in your toolbox to bring people to the table to talk about things that are important to the country as a whole, and those two are very important.
If I'm correct, you were reelected last year. So in terms of your work in the House this go-round, what's at the top of your agenda?
Well, let me tell you something. We're on the clock right now. You know, we went to the issues conference last week. And I try not to be – I don't want to sound critical of our leadership plan, but most of the conversation at Trump Doral last week was – with regard to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act extensions, reconciliation, the things that we're going to try to do under reconciliation. But, Dan, we're on the clock right now. We run out of money for the current fiscal year on March 14th. And as you and I have this conversation right now, we still do not have the numbers that we need to mark our bills to. The House marked its bills to the Fiscal Responsibility Act numbers, about $1.6 trillion. This is all discretionary yeah. spending. And the Senate marked their bills even higher. They went to FRA plus some side deals, and there's about $100 billion in difference. Well, for appropriators to move off the dime right now, we need leadership or somebody to tell us what our top-line numbers are so that we can finish the appropriations work and enact this legislation so that we don't trigger a sequester, which will happen on April 30th if we don't get it done, or before then we could flirt with a government shutdown on March 14th. That's not a healthy outcome for America. It's not what the people out there expect out of their Congress, and frankly, we need to do a better job at doing our job, and that means the sands in the hourglass are quickly moving through that hourglass, and we're on the clock March 14th. It's fish yeah. or cut bait, as we say in Arkansas, and right now we don't have the necessary guidance and direction that can enable us to finish our work. So that's job one for us. A lot of other things that we need to be concerned about, and I'm not going to diminish the importance of reconciliation and the tax right. cuts and those kinds of things, and unleashing American energy and solving for the border crisis. All of those things are very important to our country. But in military terms, you're taught early on to look at that near-term target right now, because that's the guy that has the best opportunity to take you out right now. And our near-term yeah. target right now should be finishing appropriations so that we can move smartly into the others. And you notice, Dan, I haven't said anything about debt ceiling yet. That's another yes. significant emotional event for a voting Congress, is how do you deal with paying the nation's bills and giving us some borrowing authority so we can continue to maintain government. And that is, we've already hit the debt ceiling, and through extraordinary measures, we now are operating kind of on borrowed time, and very soon that will raise its ugly head, and again, Congress will have to act.
And so part of reaching a lot of solutions in these areas is going to require work across the aisle, and that's become even more challenging in the last decade and a half as well. How do you start to bridge those gaps? I mean, we see it play out in certain circumstances on certain issues, but is there a way to bridge the gap between the two parties on a longer-term basis?
Well, it should be obvious to most people. However, if you are entrenched in the base group of voters on either party, left or right, then you don't like the idea of having to work with the other side of the aisle. But there's a good number of people, I count myself one of them, kind of in the middle of this process, that recognize that we have a significant, I used to call it a math problem. It's really not even math, it's arithmetic. When Elise Stefanik becomes the ambassador to the UN and leaves Congress, we'll be down to 217 Republicans and 215 Democrats. While we wait on some special elections to fill those vacant positions.
Right.
And you don't have to be really sharp in math or logic to figure out, and knowing full well that there's a handful of people on both sides of the aisle that will dig in on their beliefs and values and never vote for certain things or always, you know, vote a certain way. We have them. They have them. It is obvious to me, Dan, that we're going to have Democrat support on most anything that we're going to try to do. Reconciliation aside, you know, I don't expect to have Democrat support there. But on other major issues, particularly when you need 60 votes in the Senate to overcome a filibuster, you're going to have bipartisan support. And that's a reality that Congress needs to just, you know, at least wrap its arms around and agree that as unfortunate as it may be, it is, you know, it's exactly what we're going to have.
Congressman Steve Womack joining us here on the show. You have a unique perspective also about another topic I wanted to discuss, and that is local government. And you were a mayor for more than a decade in Rogers, Arkansas. And I just wanted to get a sense from you of whether or not small town USA has the voice that it really should at this juncture in terms of representing some of the needs out there.
You know, I think it's a great point. Look, my perspective as a mayor, and I try to put my mayor's hat on a whole lot of these issues. You know, mayors get things done. I mean, they don't have an alternative. And mayors have to, you know, manage competing interests and competing sides, maybe not necessarily so political in nature like we do in the Congress in a partisan type arena. But there are competing interests at the municipal level. I consider mayors, and for that matter, county administrators, county judges, those kinds of people, to be the subject matter experts on the things that matter most to the general public out there, where the rubber meets the road. And I try to take that mayor's approach, getting things done. And when I was a mayor in Rogers, Arkansas, there were times that I had to, you know, kind of bridge two competing sides together, work out deals and do things that benefit the community as a whole. And Congress should be no different right now. In divided government, 217-215 in the House, 53-47 in the Senate, you're going to have to find common ground. And that means you're going to have to work with the other side. And I think mayors probably are the best equipped to do that. I call on my mayor's experiences every day that I'm in Washington, D.C., because I do want to be we're all up here, Dan, trying to beat the status quo, trying to change the status quo. But the sure way to maintain the status quo that we're all trying to beat right now is to fail to recognize the things it takes in order to be able to, you know, come to agreement on virtually anything. And that's what I try to do every day.
So with the budgetary, and I'll finish on this, Congressman, on the budgetary side, obviously a lot of question about the spending that is there and ways to be able to rein it in. And then there is, of course, the component of DOGE. How do you think that will all kind of play itself out and what kind of impact that group may have in terms of, you know, righting some of the ship here?
Well, I'm okay with DOGE as long as it serves in an advisory capacity. It doesn't hurt for the Congress to have an outside, unelected group looking down into the weeds on a lot of things that you know we should be doing through oversight and sometimes fail to do for a lot of reasons. So I'm okay with what DOGE is trying to accomplish. I think we have to be very careful constitutionally to ensure that DOGE remains an advisory in an advisory capacity to the president and to the Congress, as opposed to giving DOGE some measure of authority or ability to change the will of Congress. They're not elected. You know, DOGE is not elected. Congress is elected. So I think we need to work with DOGE to make sure that we're accomplishing a lot of the principles and a lot of the and just a lot of the goals that the DOGE organization, the DOGE project is purposed in doing. That said, I think America needs to educate itself right now on where the true issues are with regard to federal spending. And I got to tell you, while we should be paying a little bit of attention to the discretionary budget through better oversight and squeezing as much as we can and downsizing government. That's not where the issue is. The vast majority of federal spending, two-thirds of it, is over on the mandatory side. So when you take those issues off the table, as the president has done, we can't deal with Social Security during reconciliation. And they've basically said Medicare is off limits. Maybe some Medicaid will be in play. But at the end of the day, it's the mandatory side of the spending ledger that is running out of control. There is no control on it. It's autopilot. It's automatic. The discretionary budget that appropriators like myself deal with every day, that amounts to about a third of spending. And the vast majority of that, clearly at least half of it, is national security. So we have to be careful where we're going to take the meat axe or maybe the scalpel in trying to carve out some savings. If you're just going to take mandatory spending completely off the table as a target, then you're probably not going to make a lot of progress as far as deficits and debt are concerned.
Congressman, thank you very much for your time today. A great conversation. Appreciate it and look forward to chatting down the road.
We'll do it again, Dan. All the best to you. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Congressman Steve Womack representing the state of Arkansas.